Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Hi.
How are you?
It literally is everybody.
Welcome in.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I can see your faces.
Great to see
you. When was the last time we were all on together?
I don't know. It seems like it was in the before times.
It was the before times.
It was a before the stand, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh.
Yeah, great.
People
that you know don't like you. And you
You're artificial.
Well, that's the problem with the Zoom audio.
Just don't ask Sam to clap along.
Yeah. When I get that back, it's going to be 3 seconds of me and then Larry and then two seconds of me singing and then Josh laughing.
How does Jimmy Fallon and nine people in the Roots sync all that stuff up to make it sound so good? I got a full-time editor back there just working on that crap alone.
Oh, heavens. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Andy Chanley. That's the voice of Larry Morgan. You just heard Josh Fligger, and this other fellow over here is Sam Farmer. Welcome back, everybody.
It's all of us.
Great to be back.
I think, Andy, I think we're required to introduce Sam a different way, and you know what I mean at this point. You have to introduce him, yeah.
Oh, you mean Zoom interview show host Sam Farmer?
No. Even higher accolade, I think you have to attach to it.
Because you know what he did?
Yeah.
He took our idea of doing a show. He's doing his own show.
It's called My Actual Friends.
Oh.
Well, kidding, of course. You guys are my actual friends.
Douche. You mean Hall of Famer, Sam?
That's what I'm talking about. Yes. We have to stay legal here.
Yes.
His people have been in touch.
Yeah.
He is in the Western United States Cross-Dressing Hall of Fame.
Wow. Well, I was going to say, Sam, you know you don't have to wear the yellow jacket at home.
No.
You know, you can take it off occasionally. You don't have to wear it all the time.
Yeah, the macrame lemon yellow jacket you guys presented me with.
Yeah.
Hey, Sam, I have a question. When you interview people like Jim Nance and Dick Enberg for your big Zoom show, are you also chewing on a bunch of nuts when you talk to them too? You're just munching away at some trail mix?
Metaphorically, I guess.
That's our show, everybody. Oh, my God.
I realized you were going to go straight for the jugular, but yeah, I guess that's cool.
I love it. Sam, how many episodes have aired of your show?
Let's see. I have done...
Yeah, thanks for watching, Andy.
Yeah. I've done 5 episodes. So I did Michael Connelly, who is a detective author, sold 74 million books. Steve Rushen, the sports writer, is married to Rebecca Lobo. So Steve Rushen and Rebecca Lobo were on. Peter Siegel, who... Larry knows well from college, who's a director.
Tommy
Boy. Yeah.
Tommy Boy, 51st Dates. I did Larry Paul, who's a minority owner of the Steelers. And then Friday, I did Dick Ebersol and his wife, Susan St. James. And so we got Rick Riley of Sports Illustrated coming up on the... long time Sports Illustrated, ESPN, coming up on Tuesday. And then I'm probably going to take a little break this week because of the draft.
Right.
Yeah.
It's happening, right?
It is. It's happening. And they just sent out a list of rules about what guys can and cannot do in terms of, you know, no political statements, that kind of stuff. I'll give you the list of what guys can't do here.
No hugging, I assume.
Even with family members. Let's see.
No wet willies.
If it's of interest, let me see. No. Sorry. No third party logos other than those NFL official license partners, Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, New Era. No disparaging depictions of the NFL or other brand.
Oops.
No non-NFL sports organizations or leagues. No racial, religious, or ethnic slurs. Wow, they're really getting tough here. No language. No obscene pornographic.
So no fun.
Violence. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no fun. I mean, what are they going to do? I realize they bled all the life out of this thing.
Yeah, that's your whole repertoire.
My real question is Sam, what are you going to do now that the XFL is done?
Yeah, I mean, that's XFL, I figured, it'd be the only league that would play. But I do actually do think the NFL will have some semblance of games. It's just too the opportunity to provide that content and to keep that cash flow going for a $25 billion endeavor. And look, if you go without the NFL for a season. And as cynical as that sounds, but if you go without the NFL for a season, you weaken the bond that fans have with the league, because people say,
sure,
wow, the world kept turning. I spent the Sunday with my family and kind of enjoyed it, or whatever. Those few people who might say that.
I met this person they call my wife.
Exactly. Turns out I've been living with her for over 10 years. Holy crap. On Sunday.
That in the extreme is what happened in Los Angeles with the teams being gone for 20 years, and look how hard it's been to restart that engine. So I really think the league will figure out a way. And look, who knows what it's going to be like next week. This thing is so mercurial in the way that it's changing, and the estimates and everything. It's really hard to project what life's going to be like in 6 months.
But it could conceivably be playing full games in front of no fans.
Yes.
I mean, that's one option. And think about SoFi Stadium in its opening year, this massive edifice to the game, and there's zero people in there except the players. That would be insane.
Who are they going to shoot T-shirts up with a cannon to?
Write it directly at Press Row. I would hope that we'd be there, but I don't know.
Are you worried about that? Yeah, I mean, if there is a press box and you have to be right on top of each other, are you worried about that? Because you are of advanced age.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Going on stage, you said?
That's what I said.
No, I mean, I think about everything is our whole social construct has changed. So I feel like I haven't touched anybody, but had any sort of physical contact with anyone. I can't imagine shaking hands, for instance.
Right.
You know? And so I don't fret about it per se, but it just seems so foreign to me.
I know this is a big week for you with the draft coming up. How has your procedures changed? I mean, I know you kind of had a thing where you would, you know, what are you going to do? How are you going to cover this?
Yeah. So every year since 1995, I've either been at a team facility or been in New York or the site of the draft. And it was the draft was big back then, but it wasn't like it is now. So I will probably be sitting on our bed, because I think I'm going to be
naked,
banished to the back of the house. Banished to the back of the house because my wife and daughter are going to want to watch TV and have conversations. And I'll have my computer there, the TV up. I'll be communicating with team people because they'll be at home, so I'll be texting with people, because a lot of times during the draft, as the sands, you want to be in touch with this GM and say, well, how does this change what you might do? If you're far enough out from when they're picking, as you get closer, they become less and less accessible. But
Your muffins are done.
that was a gentleman saying, stop texting me.
Yeah. I'm not telling you anything.
Yeah, exactly. But it's all new to me. I mean, I did do a mock draft. Every year I've done this for the last 15 years, I've done this reporter beat writer mock draft. And this year we did it differently. We got them in groups. So picks 1, 2, and 3, and then had it on Zoom and had a sort of organic discussion on Zoom. Well, is there any chance the Bengals trade out of that number one spot if Miami offers 2 number ones, get up and get Tua, for instance, or to get Joe Burrow? Where are the pivot points here? I mean, we've got first 6 picks, 3 teams badly need quarterbacks. Are we going to see this gold rush to the top of the draft for quarterbacks? And then teams like Indianapolis and, you know, New England needs a quarterback. Indianapolis needs a quarterback in terms of a long haul quarterback. So it'll be really interesting. But I've talked to GMs who said, you know, I'm at home. I've got a cell phone. What if my signal goes out? What if I Wi-Fi goes out? But we can't have these discussions we have, and especially with trades, because trades, you've got to have, you know, 6 landlines. Because you got one person, one coach is talking to the player.
Yeah.
Another person's talking to the other team. You got 2 people talking to the league on 2 separate lines, the trade line and the pick line. And the GM might be talking to the agent of the player. Anyway, it's very complex, and I know people are worried about it.
Yeah, I wonder if this will be like one of those years where we actually see somebody miss their pick because of – some discussion that's coming down to the very last, and then they miss that time frame, and then somebody just jumps right in front of them.
You're somebody's on Zoom, and they're going, "Don, you're on mute. Don, you're on mute. Like, we can't read your lips." Ah! The timer goes off.
Exactly. Well, the league has already said they're going to build in some latitude there and wiggle room. But look, if you need the extra time to make your pick, and you've had some technical difficulty, then we'll give that to you. But these times like these do create efficiencies too. So the league's going to kind of come out of this and realize, oh, wait, maybe, you know, they sent out 85 kits to these players, or 58 kits. And the kits have one of these lights like I'm looking at right now, this big halo light. They've got a stand. They've got a different kind of lighting things, a boom mic and 2 iPhones. And I said, that's 58. So you're sending out 116 iPhones. And I said, you're giving these guys all 2 iPhones and lights and everything. And I said, well, we did include return shipping labels. But they, you know, we're not hard and fast about that. So people might be keeping these things that the NFL sent them. Oh, anyway. Wow.
I can see people on a Zoom, you know, they're like trying to stall for more time. It's breaking up. We need to. Yeah. You're on Zoom. We see you doing that with cellophane. So you brought up an interesting question at the top there, Sam, and that is this: when we emerge and become social creatures again, what will take the place of the handshake? What will people do after that? And there have been many things thrown out, you know, the elbow bump, the
headbutt,
the bow, the hand over the heart kind of thing. I think I've decided that I want mine to be a Victorian era courtesan with the 2 fingers at the top of the forehead and rolling down.
Jesus, good Lord.
I like that.
Yeah. If you're trying to avoid physical contact, Andy, then you're going to have to not do that so somebody doesn't punch you in the face.
Somebody said on Twitter, they said, what are you going to do when this whole thing is, what's the first thing you want to do when the smoke clears here? And I said, I want to lick every banister I see.
He's talking about his next door neighbor, the banisters.
Think about things like an airplane. Okay, Southwest plane lands. They give the cursory 10 minutes to pick up the trash in the plane. and then they board the plane. Now people are going to want these things fumigated. And does that mean that you're going to have to come to the airport even earlier, or that there are going to be far fewer flights? What's, you know, what are the societal things that are going to change beyond the handshake that, you know, are?
Well, I think they're even, you know, restaurants, they're probably going to have fewer seating areas. They're going to try and keep people. I have a feeling, especially in California, because of the way Newsom's been so far, and this, and in LA for Garcetti, it's going to be a minimum, a maximum number of people. You know, they're going to cut way down on number of restaurants. When movie theaters open, it'll be, you know, you need to be three seats apart from somebody you don't know.
Right.
It's going to be weird. I mean, but I think that's going to be it. That's why everything's just going to be staggered for a while in terms of just kind of.
For a while, and there's an end game here if they're able to find a vaccine,
right?
And it's administered to, you know, hundreds and hundreds, billions of people around the world. Then we no longer have this as an issue. But until that happens, I mean, at minimum, they say that's going to be the end of next year. Like if they find a candidate vaccine and test it and it works and has good efficacy, then it's going to be, you know, at least another year before anything changes things. You know, eventually it changes and gets back to normal, hopefully, but it's going to be a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the one thing that won't change is we'll probably be getting a coronavirus vaccine with our flu shot every year, too, for the rest of our lives, because it'll change every year.
Have you ever gotten a flu shot? Do you get the flu shot?
I get it.
Do you?
I don't.
I have, and I have not the last 2 years, because I have been extremely healthy and never, and the shot itself makes me really sick.
Yeah, and I'm just super lazy.
A lot of people get way sick because of the shot itself.
I do. I'm not an anti-vaxxer by any means, because I think at a certain point every year I probably will be better about it, but I don't get the flu. My immune system is really, really strong, and I have never had an issue with that.
And I'm hung like a can of soup.
It's like a baby's arm holding an apple.
How did it go from me not getting the flu shot to the size of my prodigious manhood? I mean, and how do you guys even know that it is? Anyway.
That reminds me, when I got it this year, my wife and I got the...
It reminds you?
No, yeah, well...
Can't wait to hear.
At the Bonds, and they had the little minute clinic there, and they were giving... And it's free. And we got a flu shot, and my wife said, you know, we should really get the shingle shot, too.
Yeah.
That's really... And there was a guy in there, an older gentleman, and he said, yeah. So we got the shingle shot. And you actually get that in two parts. You get it, and then a couple months later, you get another one. And as he was leaving, we were still in there. He said, make sure to get the second shingle shot, too. And he said, oh, yeah, definitely. He goes, I had one, and then I got shingles. And we said, okay, yeah, thank you very much. And he looks back, and he said, I got it in my crotch.
No. Well, all right.
My wife certainly didn't know that.
That's amazing, because literally one time I was talking to my parents on Facebook, and my mom was talking about this uncle that we had, and she's like, you know, he got the shingles, he's not doing too good. And I'm like, oh yeah. And we're talking about it, and she goes, yeah, he got him in his sex parts. And my jaw just dropped and my stomach turned, and like Cindy, who was listening, like ran out of the room because she was about to die laughing so hard. But yeah, so
why on earth would you request them there?
Sex shingles on your sex parts.
There's the title, everybody.
There you go.
Shingles on your sex
parts. Yeah.
Hey, I wanted to get you guys caught up on some old business.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Hong Kong dongle is well documented.
Yes.
And did not satisfy. The China dongle, the China dongle, which we talked about last week, which was on its way to this continent, I've forestalled. I've waved off.
Ooh.
And when it gets here, I'm just going to send it off back to where it came from, because I realized it wasn't a robust enough dongle.
Jeez.
What I need.
Some of the dongle connoisseur now.
I found another dongle just over here in Burbank at a store. Ooh. and they shipped me the dongle, got the dongle. It's a Burbank dongle.
You're getting a little close to home with those dongles, Andy.
Yeah.
It's all coming back around. The other thing I wanted to talk to you guys about is, did you have any dongle questions before I move on?
No, I think we're good.
So we did. I know we talked last weekend, right, Larry, about animals around your place, right?
Oh, I had a skunk. We had a skunk visitation. Yeah. It's happened twice now. Yeah, eating bird seed.
Monday morning. So when I do, you know, I'm broadcasting from home, and all of us are broadcasting from home. Nick Harcourt starts broadcasting, you know, early in the morning, and does the morning show that way. Only one person can access the system at a time.
Right.
So for me, you know, I'm music director there. There's stuff I've got to do. Well, from, you know, the entire time the morning show's on, and then after it's done until like noon, Nick needs it. So that he can, you know, do his promo and all that other kind of stuff and get everything done. So the first quarter of the day is gone. So I get up at like 4:45 in the morning to come out here to the studio to get some work done. You and I have that conversation. We have that conversation on, was it Sunday that we talked?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sunday. The next morning, Monday morning, I come out and I'm expecting to maybe see, you know, I've seen raccoons out here a few times. Then a week before, there was a dead possum, baby possum on the porch that the cats had killed. So that was, you know, surreal. I'm doing a radio show, do a break, talk during a song, playing a Radiohead song, walk in to get a cup of coffee, and I have to step over a dead possum carcass. It's a little, you know, it's different. Monday morning, I walk out and open the door. And the security light comes on, and I see,
oh no,
like a full on white stripe down the back, Pepe Le Pew looking motherfucker. There is the biggest skunk I've ever seen in my backyard, on my back patio, 8 feet from me.
Oh man.
And I freeze and I smell the air. Did Tuxie get it? Did the cat get it already? Did they already have a? Because he got sprayed once before, and I'm like, oh my god, did it happen? And I didn't smell anything, and luckily the skunk was as afraid of me as I was of it, and toddled off down the driveway. But holy shit, where do these things live?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I've had that visitation again since then. We've taken the bird feeders. The birds can suck it in our neighborhood because we're not feeding them anymore because it drops through the ground. And this thing was showing up like every night to nibble on the bird seed down there. And so, and because of the way this house is laid out here, and you know, Alex has been here with us and he's in kind of a different, it's a semi-detached section. Where he has a bedroom and a sound studio, but he comes over to use the kitchen and stuff. And so I have to text him at night and go, hey, be on skunk alert when you walk across the patio, because I have no idea if you're going to walk right into it.
That would suck.
Yeah. And,
just,
you know,
so stepping on a skunk in the middle of the night when you're PJs and all you want is a peanut butter jelly sandwich.
I can't imagine if Andy had walked out to start his show or to, you know, to finish his show, get sprayed, and he's having to fight through that to go
you
finish up his
Radiohead
song.
Can you imagine how much fun we would have with that, though? Oh. That would be amazing for us.
Awesome. But here's the thing.
When you're 100 yards from a skunk, you can smell it.
But yep.
Oh, yeah.
Close, there's that incredibly acrid, nauseating smell of the skunk. I mean, it really gets intensely strong. Not like that sour, not quite the same.
Yeah,
that shit is flammable that comes out of that. I'm not lying. It's
you can they can light their farts. Really?
Really?
That juice that they spray out is flammable. It has such a high vapor pressure to it.
Skunk juice is flammable.
Here's the question. Let's say I get skunked. With all of the hoard shopping going on out there, I wouldn't be able to find enough tomato juice to bathe.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You would be like rubbing diced tomatoes and oregano on you and like tomato paste.
Not to mention that, Andy, considering all that's going on in the world right now, you would not be allowed back in your home to sleep in your own bed. So you'd be out there in the shed probably bunking down for a while it dissipated.
Well, I couldn't come in here and broadcast then. I mean, my studio would be ruined forever. Yeah. What do you do?
Yeah, you
sleep out on the grass?
You beeline for the Vons and clear everybody out. Then you have a full run of the place.
Just buy a bunch of ragu.
we had a friend whose dog got, they had a Springer Spaniel who got squirted when we lived in Boulder, and they put the tomato, they had tomato soup, and they were using tomato soup in the tub and everything. The dog drank some of that tomato soup and had the squirts all over the house.
That was a fail experiment. You just can't win right there.
that's pretty bad. That's a bad day. Oh. We got some calls if you guys want to get to them.
Sure, why not? We got nothing else to do.
Hold on, I'll play with my toy real quick here.
What was that?
He looks so confused.
What was that?
I've got a fun new toy.
What is it?
It's my, I sent you a picture of it, Andy. You're going to be so jealous.
Oh, I didn't even get a chance to look at it. I was so busy working on my dongles.
Yeah.
You got a pad to fire stuff?
Yeah.
Did you guys hear that sound? Am I the only one who heard that sound?
Which one?
The bing. No, I think I'm having a stroke.
Is there a rat in your ceiling?
But you got a thing where you can fire audio from?
Absolutely.
I want one of those.
Honestly, it's the next phase of bringing your artificial friends into the, I mean.
Andy, you stay in the dongle lane. You let Larry have this.
No, you can. Here's the other thing. If I can just brag on this for a little bit, and I'll let you see it through my Zoom. But you can also, you can connect your phone via Bluetooth, so you can play those phone calls back right there on one of the pods.
You can put the theme song.
You could put the low energy mic theme song on there.
Yeah.
By the way,
I want one of those.
Don't you have a pre-recorded version of the Your Artificial Friends theme song where we wouldn't have to have that debacle at the beginning of us trying to sing at the same time? Uh-huh. Just saying.
I do. I think there's a little bit of a sadist in me that really kind of in the absolute cacophony. All right, let me see if I can play this call back for you. And I should play this first. Low energy mic.
Low energy mic. Hey, Yappers. This is Low Energy Mike from Northeastern Oregon. This week started with a spring box replacement. This spring box is a 5-foot diameter galvanized culvert section, about 8 feet long, with a 3-inch outflow and a 2-inch overflow. The old one gets dug up and removed, and I need to dig out the bottom for room for drain rock. The elevation needed to be perfect to hook up the 3-inch outflow pipe. It took a couple tries. Then backfill around the box with drain rock, placing fabric over this and dirt on top of that. This spring supplies water to two houses on two different properties, several hundred yards away. That was Monday.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. What happened on Tuesday?
Here we go.
Rest of the week working for the property owner where the spring is located. He had some big ponderosa pines that had blown over, so I cut them into manageable sections and all the pieces to a place where you can deal with them. Then I demoed out about 10 acres of cherry trees.
Jeez.
Changed out a couple of culverts. Not a bad week for a ditch digging man.
See you later. He changed out culverts. He talks about like moving land like it's putting on a t-shirt.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like he's not being honest with us about the 3-inch outflows.
Really? You think it's probably more like 4 or, yeah, or 5? I mean,
it sounded really good.
Heavens. Well, as long as we're doing the there's another call from Thursday.
Wait, do you want to do the outro?
Well, no, here's the thing is there's another one from yesterday. This is a week's worth of calls here. So I think we skip here and we do this call really quickly. You ready? Right.
Hey, Afris. This is Low Energy Mike from Northeastern Army. Haven't been able to play any music with my buddies for a while, so you guys have to put up with me.
Nice. The Low Energy Mike Blues.
Heavens. let's see here. Oh, and then there's I'm sorry. Hold on.
That was Low Energy Mike. That was Low Energy Mike.
That had to be played, the Low Energy Mike outro. And then there's one more here, you guys. Are you ready? Let's go.
Hey, guys. It's John from the East Coast. I was just taking a little quarantine drive out and about to get out of the house and was listening to this week's show and kind of had a brainstorm. And you guys should do a sister podcast, Your Artificial Wives. I just think a lot of people would get a kick out of listening to your significant others bitch about you guys for an hour or so. At least I think it would be comical. The actual reason for this call was I had a question for Sam, but he's not in, obviously. So let me ask you guys this. When I was growing up in my early college years, I had a buddy of mine that worked an overnight radio shift. And I remember I'd hang out with him a little bit and just, I would remember all the DJ groupies that would give him a call at night and just how insane and crazy they were. And I'd always hear a lot of crazy stories from when he was on remote and these girls / ladies would show up. And, you guys have had a long time in radio and was wondering if you had any, family friendly, or actually, you don't have to be family friendly on this this podcast. But yeah. Great stories that would make us all laugh about your own DJ groupies. Of course, ones that you can tell us without your wives finding out about it, but I'm not sure. anyway, so I was just curious. Thanks as always for the great work, and I'll hang up and wait for your call. Of course, I'll be waiting another week because the podcast just came out today, but you get the hint. Thanks, guys.
All right, you guys go first with the groupies. Go ahead, Andy. Go ahead.
What clearly, happened? He wanted to talk to me because he knows about the other groupies.
He wants to know. He wants to know about those newspaper groupies. What are those newsy whores like?
Oh my God, that's the ugliest human being I've ever seen. Oh, that's a sports writer.
what's the saying? They've got a face for radio and a voice for newsprint.
So let's hear the stories.
Larry, you ever had a? Of course you did.
What do you mean? Of course I did. I had a very, very aggressive 15-year-old in Odessa, Texas, that I knew well enough to leave alone. She would have her mom drive down to the radio station to try and get in to visit me and nip that in the bud real quick. And there was when I was at Kiss FM and back when I was bordering on decent looking and at the most popular station in the world, I was surprised at how much attention you got from that. And there was one girl that came up to visit the station as part of some group and was given a tour, and she took a shine to me and started calling me like all the time. And I knew something was a little off when she came running out as I pulled out of the parking lot one night, like ran to my car to the point where I had to screech to a halt. And and I had to go. I think I immediately came up with, look, I'm engaged. I mean, it's like, and I think I was maybe dating Charlotte at the time. So it was fairly legitimate, but it was like, oh boy. And she was, and then I got the nasty, like, short of, you know, threatening to kill me letter about how I devastated her. Like,
Larry, I'm not going to be ignored.
It was that bad.
Larry, you said the 15-year-old, you nipped that in the bud really quick. I'm not.
No, that was a bad choice of words. I'm sorry.
With that euphemism. Explain after the show.
The situation, Sam, I just want to make it very clear. The scenario I put a halt to immediately.
Yes, okay.
We'll go back and edit that out.
We'll take your answer off the air.
But that was it for me. I mean, nobody really cared about me that much.
For me, my 15-year-old, no. I was in my first radio station in Lafayette, Indiana. This would have been 89, 90, 91. And I was doing overnights, and this attractive enough sounding young lady calls and says she wants to say hi, just come and say hi. And it was the first time it had ever really happened to me, right? So I don't know what dangers are involved in this, but so I'm naive enough to say, yeah, sure, okay, great. And she drives out to the station, towards the end of my shift, and she's out there with her boyfriend. He drove her over there, and he's just kind of standing off a distance and saying, hey,
watching,
and I'm like, well, this is uncomfortable. And I said, yeah, hey, I wish I could talk, but I got an engineering emergency in there that I almost gave my own time trying to think of a reason why I had to get back in that building and not have this conversation go. But that was by far the weirdest interaction I ever had. I've had sad ones, though.
I do have to ask before you stop, go to the sad one. What did she look like?
She was hot. Yeah.
What her boyfriend look like?
Like his name was Daryl, and they had another brother named Daryl.
The sad one.
Hey, Cleet. Can I date your sister? I remember one time someone calling in and I don't know if they were playing me or not, but it was late at night, and they said that they had a weapon and were contemplating ending their life, and decided to call me. And you know, the cynic in me says that somebody was just reaching out, you know, for trying to get attention. But then, you know, the realist in me says, okay, somebody was reaching out for attention, and you never ignore that. And they claim that I, you know, by keeping them on the line and I did keep them on the line until they promised that they would take down a suicide prevention line number that I gave them, and that, you know, they would call if they had any, you know, dark thoughts about it. But, it's people are weird. it's not my favorite, you know, it's ironic being in the communications field, but sometimes dealing with, people's peculiarities, it's one of my least, my favorite parts of the occupation.
What fans of radio people don't understand is that one of the reasons that most of us are in that medium is because whether or not it's true about what our appearance might be typically none of us feel comfortable actually being in and around human beings, and the idea of being entertaining and, you know, funny and you know, doing our thing in a solitary fashion in a room that's safe from any immediate feedback or direct interaction is one of the parts of our psyches that made it. The way stand-up comedians have to be in front of a group of people and get immediate feedback and get that love, the introverts in the crowd are the ones who are like, please don't make me actually do anything in front of people.
Do you guys, when you do like a live event and you're out on stage, like introducing a band or some type of whatever, you know, you're the DJ personality that's on stage talking, hyping the crowd or whatever. Do you get more nervous doing something like that than when you're on the air and like talking to, you know, how many thousands of people?
Only in the sense that you do that much less. You know, and I've likened right. When people ask about, you know, like they'll see the mixing board that you use and they'll look at it and like people will come into the sound and see that array that I had. It looked like I was flying a jumbo jet. I had an internet, you know, computer over here to do research. I had music on a screen right here. I had, you know, liners and everything and drops on this other screen. And then I had Mark over here to the right of me. And then this huge mixing board in front of me. And people would come in and say, how do you know what all that does? And I always likened it to driving or renting a car. You know, the first time I drove a Prius, I remember where it was. We were in Australia and it was my first time in a Prius. And I'm driving on the other side of the car also to begin with and trying to figure out how to drive this thing. I'm like, So I pressed that button and then but after I drove it for a day or so, then I didn't even have to look anymore to find the turn signal. I knew where it was just by feel. And so it's that kind of thing when it's brand new. Yeah. There's a learning curve, but after a while you don't even think about it. So, you know, you do thousands and thousands of hours being on the microphone as a radio jock. You don't even think about that anymore. It just feels natural. And then when you walk out on crowd in front of a huge crowd, I'm not always, you know, I'm not really intimidated by the crowd because that's an even less personal thing. Being out there in front of a bunch of people, there's, you know, strength in a crowd and everybody kind of is with you on where you're heading with it. It's not like you can go out there and do 5 minutes of strong comedy that you're going to introduce the band that they love. That stuff doesn't scare me. But, yeah, there are butterflies just in the sense that you don't do it as nearly often. And I think I told
you guys. Just because it's not a natural thing that you do all the time.
Yeah. And I told you guys about when we had the live session to the Hotel Cafe a month or two ago where all of a sudden I was standing there and I had a pang
right,
the worst thing ever,
and I'm backstage, I'm like, God, I hope I don't shit my pants right out there in front of everybody. What about you, Larry?
Pretty much the same. I think it was station appearances early on. I detested that because I was not comfortable in that environment. I didn't know I was not comfortable presenting myself on stage. And again, I went from Odessa, Texas to Kiss FM in LA. So it was this big leap and they were going out all the time. And I was I was so uncomfortable doing that. Over time, I got used to it. And then I ended up doing more like public speaking. And like by the time I took improv, helped me overcome a lot of those fears to the point where it's like, you've done the same too, Andy. You've been on stage at the Greek and been on stage at the Hollywood Bowl. And those are like, I don't remember having any sort of crippling fear of it. I just remember it's like, oh, this is, you know, 5 minutes of something that I can do this. This is just a matter of just knocking it out and then walking out. But yeah, early on it wasn't so much that I had stage fright as much as I just didn't like that environment. And I was so uncomfortable in that.
Yeah, it's a weird thing going out into a huge crowd. The one thing that I do remember, the most interesting interaction like that with a large number of people was at Deer Creek, where they changed the name of it to something else, in Indianapolis, in Noblesville. Don't remember what the name of it is now. Anyway, I remember going out there for X-Fest. It was the radio station, X-103 in Indianapolis. And it was 1996, five or six. So it's, Bush and No Doubt and trying to think of who all was on that. Maybe even Weezer, Sugar Ray. It was, it was Sponge. Anyway, we had all these bands doing this festival all day. Yeah. And, there were water bottles that they sold there, and the crowd got so worked up, and everybody decided that throwing water bottles was a great idea. And there, it's so such a bad situation that the band, I think it was Bush, wasn't going to go out because, and they were going to cancel the show if the crowd didn't start to settle down. Because I guess enough beer over hours and hours, it was getting out of hand. So I went out. They're like, somebody's got to do something, and they're all just kind of standing around and looking at me. I'm like, okay. So I was in the mornings at that time. So I walk out there on stage. I'm like, what do you say? And so I said, hey. Glad everybody's, who's having fun? And everybody, of course, cheers. I said, that's awesome. I said, the only thing I want to remind you is that if we're going to keep having fun, we got to make sure, our fun stops where somebody else's begins. So with the water bottles and stuff, I get the feeling that the bands are a little, worried to come out here tonight and keep things going if that continues. So I want everybody to repeat after me. I 20,000 people there. Will be cool, and then everybody cheers, and
then the water bottles rain on top of you.
Then they picked up rocks. Not another water bottle was thrown.
Wow.
And I walk off stage like, kind of shocked that worked, and walk off to the side, and my coworkers are there, and they're like, wow, that was kind of neat.
Yeah.
had no idea. That's awesome. But yeah, it was a weird dynamic because somehow the more people, it was easier to get to get them to all follow than it would be like a classroom of, 15 kids where they're given the substitute teacher the business. It's a weird dynamic. And that's the thing, like Larry, I'm sure you felt when you go into you go into a bigger place, you go to a big bar where there's a bunch of people. Yeah. And you get on the mic and you can have fun, bring people up. You can play games. I used to like to play, when I was doing the Guinness toasts, I remember being at Y107 and they were sending me out everywhere to do these Guinness toasts every Friday night. And I took a Guinness Book of World Records and would open it up and find, okay, the world record for champagne glasses stacked one on top of another, and we have somebody come up and give them 60 seconds and have to do the high low like Bob Barker used to do. Many? 1,000 lower, 500 higher, and go. And if they got it in 30 seconds, then they won whatever the prize was. Those kinds of things where everybody's into it, that's fun. But if you go into a place and it's dead and there are seven people there, getting up on the microphone every 15 minutes and saying, hey, I'm Larry Morgan from K-Earth. Come out here to give you some coupons to go see this and that. It's murder. Yeah, you feel like
Try playing 3 one-hour sets in front of seven people.
Yeah.
You get to leave the stage. We got to stay up there for an hour and look at the same drunk staring at me.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Well, anything else you guys wanted to share with me today? You've been generous with your time.
No.
Nah.
So Sam, next week you're taking the week up. When is the draft? Is it this will be airing on Thursday?
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
So it's the draft is tonight as this airs.
Yes. Tonight. First round.
Who's the first pick, Sam?
Joe Burrow. Louisiana State quarterback going to the Bengals. But it could be a mad scramble to get Tua Tagovailoa, the Alabama quarterback. Mm-hmm. And that could be Miami trying to trade up for him, could be the Chargers trying to trade up, or even New England coming all the way up from 23 to get him.
Whoa.
Yeah, wow.
So it's – and then Andy's Colts. They got to find a quarterback beyond Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, I'm worried that this is going to be the year where he does one of those sidearm throws and his arm just comes out of the socket and goes,
goes like 30 yards down the field and hits the defender in the back.
There's a penalty for throwing your arm, I'm sure. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting it's going to be interesting to see how things all shake out there, because he is certainly a capable quarterback, and they have an offensive line now that can keep a quarterback upright finally.
Yeah, and that offense really suits him, and it's Frank Reich, who he knows well.
Yeah,
and the Chargers, their offensive coordinator was a Chargers quality control offense guy, so it fits Phillip, and he's such a good guy, and I think he's still got something left in the tank, probably more than Tom Brady has. So,
well, I would be, I would not be surprised at all if the Colts go to the playoffs this year. And even, you know, a ways into it, it's going to be an interesting, it's going to be interesting to see how things shake out.
Yep, I agree.
It's going to be interesting to see how teams react to, if they have to play in front of very few people. I think that's where the advantage goes to the Jets, who are completely used to it. So,
well, I think Phillip Rivers, I don't know that he's ever seen a fan since LA. So,
well, here's another question. The home field advantage is virtually gone.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know, where the crowd yells so loud when a team's on offense, that won't happen this season.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be really interesting to see how the league mitigates that, because this is a science fiction season we're heading into.
Just imagine how many F-bombs we're going to hear on TV now. You know, all those players just dropping the F-bomb here, all over the place.
Yeah.
F's, and everybody's going, you mother F-er. That's all you're going to hear. Yeah. It's going to be great.
And grunts.
Yep.
That's going to be amazing.
All the trash talking.
I think that now that they don't have the crowd noise, they should be able to put some sort of completely disruptive music on the loudspeaker.
Yes,
eight-bit Nintendo music just the whole time, like the Mario theme.
I'm thinking Yakety Sax,
like Benny Hill.
Big year for Jerry Glitter.
I think Yoko Ono, Cambridge 1969, and I hope that Aaron finds the video of that and puts it up. If it gets put up on our Facebook page, if anybody is able to listen to the whole thing.
I want to hear the first time somebody kicks a field goal and it hits the post and everybody laughs. And it just makes that big bong and the old defense just goes,
Strange times.
Oh, well, indeed. Whoa!
Did that really just happen?
I almost fell on my ass.
Larry almost into fell. The closet.
By the way, we're looking at the inside of Larry's closet, and it's lovely to see all of your dress shirts. And
these are my blouses.
Right here. Yeah.
It's amazing. Sam, how can people get a hold of you if they want to?
Excuse me. My email is sam.farmer@latimes.com, and my Twitter handle is @LATimesFarmer.
And how can they find this new Zoom show that you've done, this interview?
You know, I'm trying to expand this without going crazy with it, because I found that I'm posting them on YouTube. But I've been in a couple meetings lately, Zoom meetings, certainly one yesterday, where somebody broke in and started screaming racial epithets and
really?
Pictures. Yeah, putting pictures up on the screen that were – you know, violent pictures, and it was awful.
Jesus.
And so I just don't know how to open this up to the public without opening up to people like that.
That sucks.
Right now, I've kept a circle fairly tight of 40 people.
Maybe you can. Andy, stop doing that.
It's unnerving.
You told me when it was going to happen. You expected I was just going to sit on my hands?
I was just talking to my wife. We have to do a conference call every morning for the office, just kind of a, you know, just to check in, see if anything is going on. And I'm tempted just in the middle, you know, it's a call, so that nobody knows where the audio is coming from. I'm tempted just to flush the toilet one time and see what happens. Just in the middle of the call, flush the toilet and just stay quiet and see if anybody says anything.
Yeah. Say something like that water is cold and deep too. Maybe you could just take you know, messages off Twitter while you're doing the thing, Sam. And
that's a great idea. That's a, you know, great idea. Whether to field that or I think I put maybe Pete Siegel or one of those calls up on the your unofficial friends page.
Nice.
To invite people to come to it. So I'm going to figure out a way. I'm still looking at the delivery mechanism and a way to do that to get a good group of people, because I think I can do it up to 200 people. Wow. And so because the cool element of these shows is I ask a couple of questions to get them rolling, but then the viewers can ask the questions. So you get to ask, if it's Joe Buck, you can ask Joe Buck the question you want to ask him, and he'll, on video, and he replies to you on video. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Interesting. Crazy.
Right, keep us posted, and we'll send people
Thank you.
We'll send our four listeners to check that out. Larry, how can people get a hold of you?
You can follow me on Instagram at TheLarryMorgan. And speaking of Pete Siegel, I just did a special episode of my Snark Monkey podcast with him. We're talking about go-to movies during this strange time, those comfort movies you turn to help kind of soothe your jangled nerves that you know will bring you a little bit of joy. And he and I sit down for an hour, talk about some of the stuff that's impacted him and his work because of the pandemic, as well as the 1978 Warren Beatty comedy, Heaven Can Wait. And we take a deep dive into that one.
Nice. What about you, Josh?
Snark Monkey. Search Snark Monkey wherever you get podcasts.
Snark
Monkey. JoshuaJFlinger@gmail.com.
And Alex's...
It's currently on hiatus, but you can check out his YouTube channel. He just released a beautiful new song, and he's putting out one a week here in April, Schmorgle on YouTube, S-C-H-M-O-R-G-L-E. Some great music that he's been doing from a little house like right here on the property every week. Schmorgle on YouTube.
Nice. For me, it's Andy Chanley on Instagram. It's DJ Andy Chanley on Facebook and Andy_Chanley on the Twitter.
Oh, it sounds beautiful.
Yeah. It's going to take me 9 hours to edit the audio on this.
Yep. Have fun.
Larry's just shaking.
Yeah.
Love you, Larry.
Oh, what's
Brownwood, by the way?
Brownwood High School, Brownwood, Texas, man. Brownwood
High School, nice.
That's where I was born.
Wow, what do you got?
Block the charge.
You know that?
No.
Rex Chapman's little theme of his Twitter account. You got to go on and see that. Oh, Long John Silver's.
Yeah, this is the Long John Silver's right here. That's one of the things I like to support.
Josh might win with a Long John Silver.
That's pretty sweet.
Love you, people. Great to see your faces.
Did that say John? Did that say John? Mm-hmm. Oh, I wasn't sure if it was Long John Silver or
John. Oh,
yeah. When the
that
you know don't I like you.
Tune into this podcast.
And you're unofficial.
Where you are
unofficial
friends. Worst barbershop quartet ever.
Where is the end meeting button?
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
That's great. Thank you, guys.
That was fun.